Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Researchers have known for years that women are more likely to suffer from pain than men. Women have a lower pain tolerance, and they have a lower pain threshold. And women are more likely to get migraines and other types of chronic pain. But why women suffer more is unclear. Scientists are still trying to understand the role that genetics or hormones or even culture might play in these differences. And if they get to the bottom of that, that could change the way doctors treat pain. Women might receive one treatment, and men might receive another. To talk about the latest in local pain research and how gender plays a role in the way people experience pain, we're joined in our studio by Dr. Daniel Carr. He's a professor of pain research at Tufts Medical Center. And also with us is health writer Judy Foreman, who wrote a piece on gender and pain that ran in this week's Boston Globe. Welcome to Radio Boston to both of you.
Thank you.
Judy, I think I want to preface all this by saying there are all sorts of stereotypes related to gender and pain. On one hand, there are probably plenty of women that would tell you that when they're sick, they're stoic, and when their husbands are sick, they complain endlessly. On the other hand, there's this stereotype that women are weaker than men. So this, I'm hoping you can break a lot of that apart with us over the course of us talking about this. But Judy Foreman, maybe we should start with the basics, which is, how much more do women experience pain than men, and how do we know this?
We know it from epidemiological studies, which is where scientists take big groups of people and basically count how many get sick from different things. We know that women get more irritable bowel syndrome, more fibromyalgia, more headaches, especially, as you mentioned, migraines, more neuropathic pain, which is kind of a weird word, but it means pain that's actually caused by damage to your nervous system from too much pain input, overactive pain nerves, essentially.
So pain leads to more pain.
Exactly. It revs up. And osteoarthritis, TMJ, a whole gamut of things. Women get more of it. As for the question of, you know, are women more stoic, it's really tricky. In laboratory experiments, women say they're in pain sooner during an experiment that's designed to evoke pain. And they kind of yell uncle quicker than men. But they have more pain to deal with, so it's very tricky.
Why do women have more pain to deal with?
That's a good question. It's not clear, and we can get into that in a few minutes, but hormones seem to be a major contributor. But which way they go is unclear. Estrogen, the research on estrogen is really all over the place. What is a little clearer is testosterone, the male hormone, does seem to protect against pain. But estrogen kind of swings both ways.
So let's come back to hormones, because it sounds like, we'll come back later, because it sounds like there's a lot there.
There is.
Dr. Carr, let me jump over to you. You're an endocrinologist. You're also an anesthesiologist. And you've studied pain after surgery. And I believe that one of the things your work has found is that women need more morphine after surgery. In fact, sometimes significantly more morphine. So why is that? Are they in more pain?
Well, they are. And at every level of the pain experience, ranging from the part of tissue that gets injured in surgery to the interpretation of that feeling, women can and often do respond differently than men. So in terms of their sensitivity to morphine, there are differences in how the morphine will interact with its target receptors. There are differences in pathways that conduct the pain to the brain where it's interpreted as an experience.
So if women and men have an identical surgery, say they both have, let's say, knee replacement, anything, it's possible that an identical surgery will result in more pain for the woman coming out of it than the man coming out
That's
of it.
That's correct.
Listeners, we're taking calls during this segment, and we want to know if you think your doctor responds differently to your pain complaint based on whether you're a man or a woman, because that's part of what this research is about. Should gender factor into how a doctor treats you? We also want to know if you think you have a higher or lower threshold for pain than your spouse, whether your spouse is a male or a woman. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dr. Carr, you were just talking about your study involving morphine after surgeries and that women need more than men. But I believe that refers specifically to women in the U.S. because I think you also did a study involving Chinese women post-surgery.
We did do a study with some collaborators of women of different ethnicity, and that's another great point. There are other factors besides just gender that influence how severe the pain appears to be for the same operation and what the responses are to pain medication.
Because in your study of Chinese women, those Chinese women actually experienced less pain than men, whereas women in the U.S. experienced more pain than men. So is that suggesting that we have a genetic difference here, or a cultural difference in how we manage pain?
Both of the above. there are certainly very strong genetic influences, and people are learning now about which genes act in which way to alter the sensation of pain for one and the same operation or trauma. But there are also very, very important cultural differences in how people interpret pain and also how they voice pain to others.
Judy Foreman, can you jump in here and tell us, when Dr. Carr refers to cultural differences, what does that mean, cultural difference when it comes to managing pain?
Well, it's very interesting. You're making me think of something I was just reading about. When people test men and women for pain, the gender of the tester, of the experimenter, really matters. If you have men talking about their pain in front of a woman experimenter, they report more pain than in front of a man, whereas women don't care whether it's a man or woman testing them for pain. They report the same level of pain. So men kind of act macho in front of a woman, which is, it sort of gets to the cultural thing, because men kind of seem like they have to act tough. Women are encouraged to not act so tough, but then doctors, friends, family react not so favorably when women express their pain, which then leads to kind of this prejudice against the whining woman, which leads to undertreatment of women's pain, which is a serious issue. Sometimes women are given tranquilizers, men are given pain meds.
So this whining woman phenomenon,
the whining woman,
as you just described it, is that when a woman shows up in a doctor's office, there might be some doctors conditioned to think it probably doesn't hurt as much as she says it does.
Exactly.
She's just a woman, and she expresses it differently than a man might.
And she's probably exaggerating.
We also have with us someone else who's joining us by phone, and this is Dr. Anne Louise Oaklender. She's an associate professor of neurology at Harvard Medical School who's been studying nerve pain in women. Welcome to Radio Boston, Dr. Oaklender.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Now, you have been studying pain, of course, and can you give us an overview of what you've found? Because in some ways, you've found what could be key to all this, and it has to do with pain receptors, I believe.
We're very interested in the reason why some people are left with chronic pain after problems that most people handle without difficulty. One example, for instance, could be shingles, where some people who've had shingles are left with postherpetic neuralgia, whereas many others are not. Our group is quite interested in the generalized nerve damage, or polyneuropathy, that's becoming increasingly common. It can be caused by diabetes, which is becoming more common, exposure to chemotherapy, even to AIDS drugs. And some patients who have these polyneuropathies have chronic pain.
We have some calls on the board already from people who have some personal experiences that I think are worth bringing in. So let me go to James from Auburn. James, thanks for calling. And you were in a parachute accident recently?
Well, I was in a parachute accident about 3 years ago. It was a bad landing, and that left me with permanent sciatica in my left leg. So I was seeing at the physician. My wife had a car accident shortly after that and had almost the identical injury. Even a CAT scan showed L4, L5, things like that. And
so you both had spine injuries after injuries after your accidents.
Right, and neuropathic pain going down the left leg. And she wasn't getting any satisfaction from her physician. So I said, you should see mine. And when she came back from the visit, she said, he gave me naproxen, NSAIDs. He didn't do anything for it. Meanwhile, he's giving me painkillers. He just treated her as a woman.
So you think your genders played a role in how your respective doctors treated you?
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubt.
James, let me turn this over to Dr. Oaklender, who not only studies pain, but studies pain differences based on gender. Dr. Oaklender, what are your thoughts about what the caller just said?
Well, I think it's hard to know. Many factors may have gone into play. Certainly, I can't comment about the treatment of another doctor. But it is true that overall the medical system does tend to react differently to women and to men. There's also increasing evidence that men and women may have biological differences that affect who is left with chronic pain after the kind of problems that James has described. Some of this has already been published, and you've been discussing from the lab of Jeff Mogul. Our laboratory has new data, still preliminary because it's not yet published. In fact, the study is still ongoing, looking at the number of pain nerve endings in tiny little skin biopsies taken from the lower leg. This is a revolutionary technique that's used to make the diagnosis of the kind of nerve damage we were talking about earlier. But we realized that in order to know what's abnormal, we needed to figure out what's normal. And so for that reason, my lab has been doing these tiny little skin biopsies, with IRB permission, of course, on normal people of both sexes, different ages, and different races. And as we approach 200 patients studied, it's become statistically clear that, in fact, women of all ages start out with more pain nerve endings in the skin than men do.
Dr. Oaklander, Dr. Daniel Carr of Tufts Medical School is in the studio here, and it looks like he wants to say something based on what you said, so let me go to him.
Well, I just wanted to add, to make a takeaway, simplifying message, that based on what James was saying, and I echo what Dr. Oaklander said, that there are studies that indicate women voicing a pain complaint may be treated differently. The bottom line here is that regardless of your gender, if you don't feel that your problem is being adequately listened to or taken care of, you should escalate.
You should escalate your complaints or your...
Correct.
You should be more vocal.
That's correct. If your primary care doctor may be harried and not have enough time and has a lot on his or her mind, you should ask for a specialist referral. And you should advocate for yourself.
Judy Foreman, sure.
I'd like to say that I'm obviously a woman, and I had severe neck pain a couple of years ago. It's really tough to advocate for yourself. I went to a number of doctors before I finally found a total sweetheart of a doctor at New England Baptist Hospital. It's really hard, and I really think the fact that I was a woman, even seeing a woman doctor at one point, was a strike against me. So I really echo what Dr. Carr said, which is keep trying, and if the doctor you're seeing isn't helping, try another one.
Judy Foreman, Dr. Oaklander made a reference to possible biological differences. And so I wonder then, could there be an evolutionary reason that women feel more pain than men? Is that what this is about?
Well, there is some thought that there is evolutionary stuff going on, that women in general are more sensitive in terms of their nervous system, in terms of picking up smell, visual cues, general signs of danger, and possibly the greater sensitivity of women to pain may be one facet of this, that women are just kind of more on high alert in general than men, and pain may be just one part of this.
Your piece in The Globe, I think, said that this sort of increased...
acuity.
Exactly, this sort of sensory acuity could have been traits that helped women in earlier times protect children they watched over while the men were away. So we get to this sort of very caveman era possible reason for this.
Yes, yeah. I mean, you can see that it would have some adaptive value.
Let me take another caller. This is Tricia from Brighton. Hi, Tricia.
Hi. Keeping with the advocacy story, I had a persistent, probably about 2 years, something was going on that was otherwise being seen as probably hot flashes. I kept on advocating that it was not specifically like a hot flash. It was more like a burning, aching surge. And I went and saw several different doctors because I knew that it wasn't the typical what my sisters or friends were experiencing. And through my pushing and shoving my way through, eventually I did get a diagnosis. Although rare, it was a pheochromocytoma. And frankly, you know, it was one of those type tumors that, you know, it's critical to find because of the risk factors are so high to me. But it was only because I was more of a assertive type that kept on saying, no, that's not the case. You know, it's something more. I'm also getting these irregular heartbeats. And so through push and shove, I ended up getting the diagnosis of pheochromocytoma. Only after a couple different referrals from different doctors just staying with it and saying, no, it's not. And they put me on antidepressants. They put me on anti-anxiety. And so ultimately that advocacy worked for me and
sure.
Probably saved my life.
Thank you for that. I actually want to go straight to another caller so we can hear from several people and then maybe come back to comment on that. This is Nicole from Chestnut Hill. Nicole, you and your boyfriend had an identical surgery last year, so I imagine you have an interesting perspective on this.
Yes, we had the same surgery. They were about 5 months apart. We had our turbinates reduced and our deviated septums fixed. We both had bad allergies. And I was fine after the surgery, but he reacted pretty horribly to the anesthesia and had to be kept like an extra couple of hours, and was very sick after and had excessive bleeding. And I was fine, and the long-term effects, he doesn't really notice a difference in his allergies or his breathing. And I noticed a very increased improvement in my breathing and my allergies, or the decrease in my allergies. So
what about in terms of post-surgery pain?
I didn't have much. He had a little bit of pain. We both had to take painkillers for that, but it seemed that he needed more nursing, I think, than I did. So I think this is a case where maybe, you know, gender does not play a role. But
Nicole, thanks for that. So, Dr. Carr,
let me just pick up on something the prior caller mentioned, because I think it's another important take-home message. The body is wired differently in its appreciation of pain from internal organs, called visceral pain, versus things that go wrong on the surface of the body, called somatic pain. We're terrific at detecting and localizing things that happen to the surface of our body, I guess because during evolution we could pluck out a thorn or an arrow, but we couldn't do much with internal organs. But sometimes, and particularly with women, some of the pain problems arise from a visceral organ, and intrinsically these may be harder to articulate and to pinpoint. But I go back to what I said earlier. If you don't think something is right, even if it's a little difficult to articulate or pinpoint, that may just be because of where the origin is, maybe internal, and you should stick to your guns.
Thank you for that. So let's talk about why this matters. So there seems to be a general scientific body of evidence that says women feel pain more than men do. But why does that matter? Judy Foreman, is this about a new approach to treating how pain is treated?
Well, it matters a lot because pain is actually a huge problem in this society. Like 70 million Americans supposedly live in chronic pain, and a third of them are disabled by it. And yet the government spends less than 1% of the National Institutes of Health budget on pain. And despite that, pain is the main reason people go to doctors. And doctors don't learn about it in medical school. They, on average, get 1 hour of pain training in medical school. So you can see it's a huge societal problem, and that problem affects women way disproportionately from men. So it really does matter to have all these people in pain and having it not be addressed adequately.
Dr. Carr, do you think what you now know about gender and pain has changed the way you treat male versus female patients?
I would say so. I would say that any healthcare provider should reach out a little bit more if a woman is saying that she has pain, not be dismissive, and try to elicit what's the intensity, what are the symptoms. Actually, at Tufts, what we did about 10 years ago was to recognize there's a huge gap with healthcare providers who don't go through the standard pain fellowship track. And so we opened a program in pain research, education, and policy that's enrolled nurses, pharmacists, physiotherapists, EMTs, dentists, because you don't just have to be a doctor to see people with pain and to make an impact. You could do that if you're an acupuncturist, nurse, and so on. So we're very happy with the Tufts program on pain research, education, and policy.
And Dr. Oaklander, it sounds like you may have been paged in the background, so I hope you're still with us, because I have a question for you about your discovery that women have more pain receptors than men. So what practically can we do with that discovery?
The reason why it's important at a practical level is that this information about the number of pain nerve endings in the skin, we use that to diagnose peripheral neuropathy. And right now, the same normative values are used for men and for women. But finding out that there are differences means that, in fact, we need different norms to use for men and women. What's normal for a man might be abnormal for a woman, and vice versa. So by recognizing what's called a sexual dichotomy, a difference between the sexes, and correcting for it, we will be able to improve diagnosis for both men and women.
Judy Foreman, you raised hormones at the very beginning, mm-hmm. and we have a caller who wants to raise that issue. This is Linda from Magnolia. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Fine, thank you. It was mentioned earlier in the program that testosterone can be a protector against pain. I was wondering if that hormone were administered to females, would that not help them with the pain management?
Dr. Carr, Judy, would you like to take that one?
That's a great question. To my knowledge, that has not been used as a pain treatment, but there have been some interesting studies on transsexuals and the people who go from being female to male and therefore take testosterone to acquire more male sexual characteristics, their pain gets better. So that sort of does suggest that it fits in with what people know about testosterone maybe helping with pain. On the flip side, the estrogen thing is really complicated because at puberty, boys and girls' perceptions of pain really differ. Until puberty, they report pretty much the same levels of pain, same incidence, the whole thing. After that, girls start reporting more pain and more intense pain, you know, more severe pain. And that's for headaches, for TMJ, for a whole slew of problems. So given that puberty is the, you know, like a hormonal threshold, there have got to be hormones involved. And there have been a lot of studies showing how pain can change over a woman's menstrual cycle, how it changes with menopause, pregnancy. You know, there's so many hormonal things happen during a woman's life that all of those can affect pain. And just as a point of information, the nerve cells actually have tons of receptors on them for sex hormones, for testosterone and estrogen. So nature somehow, in wisdom or not, designed the system to be sensitive to hormones.
Dr. Carr of Tufts Medical Center, if we can get more to the bottom of this, does this mean one day there could be a blue pill for men to treat pain, a pink pill for women to treat pain? Is it just about very different paths of treatment if a woman comes in versus a man comes in?
Well, there certainly could be, Sasha. On the other hand, again, to put it in context, individuals do differ from other individuals based on many genes and also their own personal experience and their psychosocial history and so on. I expect there will always be overlap to a considerable degree between the genders in their response to pain medications, but there may be tendencies or trends towards differences, like certain kinds of opioid painkillers appear to work much better in women than men, so-called kappa opioids.
So do we need to develop different pain medications specifically for women?
I would say yes, because we know that the targets of our efforts to relieve pain differ according to gender. That doesn't mean they don't also differ according to other genes and so on, but people are working on that too. So I think the more comprehensive and detailed and clearer picture we have of the different influences on the pain experience, the better off we'll be able to individualize therapy.
Judy Foreman, in your story, I was struck by it was this, you really did a survey of how much pain research is out there and where we are right now, and it seems that a lot of it is conflicting. I mean, much of science often is, but it seems a lot conflicting. Some directly contradicts another. It just seems that we know a lot, but there's still a lot that needs to be known.
That's really true, and that's actually why I'm writing a book about the whole thing, right? Even as we speak, practically. I just want to respond to the caller who was able to stick to her guns and describe her pain as burning. It's really important, if you have pain, to kind of keep track, like keep a diary of when it's worse, when it's better, and use kind of really descriptive words, because the fact that she was able to describe her pain as burning and not just it hurts probably allowed her doctors to figure out what kind of pain she had.
So detailed descriptions are important.
Yes.
Judy Foreman, thank you for that. Thanks to all three of my guests for joining us today. Judy Foreman is a Boston-based health writer who's working on a book about pain. Dr. Daniel Carr is a professor of pain research at Tufts Medical Center. And Dr. Anne Louise Oaklander is a neurologist at Mass General. Thanks to all three of you. Up next, after a short break, we visit a goat farm in central Massachusetts run by a former MIT engineer. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.